IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme. The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
Good morning to you. You're very welcome back to the programme. It's 10 past 10 on this Wednesday, the 21st of February 2024. Loads coming up over the next couple of hours, so stay right where you are. Earlier on, we were talking about, and if you weren't listening, why not? We were talking about concerns over the loss of physiotherapy services from St. Joseph's Hospital in Stranola. We also spoke to three great students from Loreto in relation to an awareness drive that they're involved in to increase water safety amongst younger people. My mum and myself need physio. None of us drive, and getting to Letterkenny would be hard. My mum is 89. St. Joseph's was a vital service, and it's a disgrace that it's been taken away. None of the councillors deserve our votes after what they've done to St. Joseph's Hospital. And councillors will say that they can lobby and all, but these are HSE decisions. But again, I only say that for balance, not to contradict your point of view or to say that you're wrong. We're in contact with the HSE to try and get some clarity on the situation. The same goes for the Buncrana Community Hospital, which used to be called the Buncrana Community Nursing Unit. It's been downgraded for the last few years. Day services have been moved to the Sleeve Schnacht Centre outside Buncrana, and that's a story we covered quite a bit in this show as well. And just to be, just to make sure that everyone is aware that this is your show as well, and often, well, a lot of what we talk about, it's off the back of listeners and others who say, look, this is happening. Can you do something about it, or can you publicise it? We don't know everything, so we rely on you listeners out there for what's happening in your area or something that you want us to talk about or think something you need to be talked about. And that extends, by the way, to a good news story that you think should be talked about as well. It's not, we're not just here trying to harvest bad news as well. We do our bit as much as we can to try and address issues, but we're here for a plethora of things, good and bad. So you have to get in contact with us too if you think we're not talking about something you believe we should be. 086 60 25000, the WhatsApp and text, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Right. Let's see. We were talking about school uniforms yesterday, and this is the, I want to catch up on some of the comments. We got a flurry of comments that came in. It was a debate on whether or not school uniforms should be done away with. Arguments being made that in countries where there are no school uniforms, there's no increase in bullying and what have you, and some conflicting evidence as to whether it levels the playing field. So in other words, going to school doesn't become a fashion show. I'm just going to read your texts as they came in. My God, could you imagine the bullying that would go on in this day with mobile phones, etc.? Look what she, he had on today, and all of a sudden it's around half the school, and that poor child who cannot afford certain clothes is laughed at. Keep school uniforms. And from my perspective, look, we had a, you know, we had a good upbringing. Mum and Dad worked very hard to, to get us the stuff that we needed for school and what have you, but there was a lot of us. And, you know, a lot of hand-me-downs and other things. And I don't want to talk, I don't want to mention it in case it sounds like I wouldn't change a thing. But I do remember the feeling of going into school, and with the best will in the world, you know, I knew I probably didn't have the same clothes as other people, or look as well as other people, or what have you. And it was tough, you know, and it's tough on the young mind as well. And some of these things do stick with people. So I would be an advocate of school uniforms, but I'm not hard and fast in my rules. And I'm not hard and fast in my rules. My opinion, sorry, they can change. But what I would like to see, I do like uniforms, but I want to see them affordable. I want to do away with this one-upmanship amongst schools that seems to be there about, you know, having to get fancy jumpers out of particular shops. No, I don't want to do any shops any damage either, but you understand there has to be another way of doing it. You know, having to get the tracksuits, the tracksuit tops, the jackets. And I know, oh, well, you don't have to get them, but if other people do get them, then it's mom, dad, can I have this? Anyway, a caller says, at least when you buy a uniform, it does them for school year. I prefer that than trying to keep them fitted out for a full year in the latest brands every day or week for a school year. I think it's rubbish debate. The children can be individual and have their own personality while still wearing a uniform. For me as a parent, a school uniform's a good thing because I can't afford to buy labels for my kids or have a mountain of clothes for them to wear. The uniform means no one can tell how rich or how poor some families are. As for the gender argument, I think that's been thrown out as an argument far too much. How now, yes to uniforms here. I think the gender thing actually might really be one of the key triggers for that conversation, is kind of what the feeling I've been getting with what I've been reading over the last while. I think that actually might be a about that. This might be what this latest debate is actually about, rather than it being a side issue. Parents have enough clothes to wash with the cost of electricity without this carry-on. Plenty of time to express themselves out of school, says Ava. Lovely name, Ava. Do we need a fashion show at school every day? Asks a listener. Please do not do away with uniforms, says another. I wouldn't be able to keep up with the Joneses. Please don't un-uniform. So good for this reason. Another, it makes troublemakers at lunchtime easily identifiable. Keep them, says a listener. Another, uniforms are the best thing that ever happened. No distinction between the well-off and the rest of us. And another caller says, on a completely different issue, should be no school homework. But that is a debate in and of itself, especially with everyone having such busy lives. So the no's have it in relation to should uniforms be done away with. People don't want them. Unanimously, the people texting in the show so far today are in favour of them. And I have to say, I would be too, for every reason that was outlined in those texts. Now, the banking and insurance defective block focus group was due to meet with, we'll outline that in a moment. They were due to meet with representatives to discuss the issues, obviously, which are the focus of that group. Unfortunately, that meeting has been postponed. Sarah is of the Banking and Insurance Focus Group and joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Sarah.
Hi, good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. I didn't want to confuse it, so I sort of delayed explaining what this meeting was about to allow you to do it, so it's perfectly clear. So what was on the agenda for the meeting that was scheduled for today?
So today was a follow-up to the meeting that we had on the 11th of January, and maybe let me take you back a bit. So we've been working on this for up to a year now at this point, Greg. We came together this time last year and we, you know, presented our issues regarding funding for remediating your homes or demolishing and rebuilding your homes. And we met with TDs, the BPFI, who are the umbrella body that represent the banks at government level, Insurance Ireland, Irish Banking and Culture Board. You know, we had all of those meetings way back this time last year, and we presented to the Oireachtas in July. In September, there was a headline by Niall Blaney on this show, or at least this station, I believe, where the banks announced that they would give 0% loans for anyone approved on the scheme. So that was very premature because that has not yet happened. So the you know, the banks still are not in a position to have a product to give to somebody who wants to borrow. So over time for us, it became apparent that whilst money is one barrier to the scheme, ensuring the home is mortgageable and can achieve full market value is a bigger picture.
And that is,
and we kind of changed tactics mid-year.
Yeah, and that really, really is critical, isn't it? And I think it's actually really critical to the scheme and those engaging in it, or what level of destruction of the property and rebuilding it, what it's rebuilt on. It's really, really critical, isn't it, that we know as soon as is possible if a house just has its outer leaf done, or if it doesn't have its foundations done, is it mortgageable? Is it insurable? Is it seen as being full market value to another property? And if that is not the case, we can't be rebuilding hundreds and thousands of properties that aren't mortgageable, aren't insurable, can't be sold, can't be exchanged, and have no real, don't have the full market value. It's so crucial, this clarification.
Exactly, Greg. And the BPFI did put out a statement in December, and it's an industry position statement that's very, very clear. And it says that, you know, they cannot themselves determine what is mortgageable or what is not mortgageable. They rely on the professional bodies to do that, which means that an engineer would have to certify that the home is of standard construction, or you know, is the same as the house next door, doesn't have defective material, as I understand it. So that position was very clear from them. And nobody, you know, the BPFI statement talked about if someone decides to sell the remediated home, it's not about selling your home, it's about life and what happens in life. So nobody knows what the future holds. You know, you might have a marriage breakdown or a relationship breakup whereby a house needs then to be sold. It's not that people are here trying to rebuild a house and, you know, get it at market value today and sell it on. That is not what it's about. Many of these homes are built on.
It's our principal asset, though. I, you know, I don't think there's any shame in wanting it to be of full value. The problem, and the reality is, though, Sarah, and correct me if I've got the timelines wrong, between the last meeting, or at least the meeting before that, and this next meeting, though, the science has advanced in that, you know, there is increasing evidence that an outer leaf fix might only defer the inevitable, that the inner leaf will start to go, and maybe sometime after that the foundation might start to go. So ask the question, are we repairing these houses forever? Are we repairing them for 10 years? Are we repairing them for 20 years? Are we repairing them for 30 years? And with that confusion in the air, until such time as we know the full facts there, I can't see really how the banking and insurance sector can actually formulate a position that they'll stand by.
Yeah, so the science is all tied into this IS 465, the standard, and I'm no expert on that, but I will just say that it is my understanding that that revised IS 465 will not be ready until next year. So although we have the science and we have lots of great reports from, you know, Professor Paul Dunlop and those people who have published what they're working on, we haven't caught up, the standard hasn't caught up to that. So in the meantime, the government are ploughing ahead to remediate homes at an old standard, which doesn't address many, many of the issues that we need addressed. As you said, we don't know what we're restoring a home, and somebody may be able to move back in. The government are I believe, and my personal opinion, is that they're pressing the banks and the engineers to accept the 40-year guarantee. But let's just be clear, the 40-year guarantee means that you can get back on the scheme. It doesn't mean that your home won't have the same issue going forward. They couldn't say that, mm-hmm. and they're reluctant to say that. And the science would tell them they should be reluctant to say that. So, you know, banks, I don't believe, should accept a 40-year guarantee. At the end of the day, it's their asset right now, and whether they like it or not, they're tied into this process with us. We've all been rammed down this one road by the government. And, you know, maybe it's the fact that Darragh O'Brien is too proud to say stop. Okay, maybe we did get it wrong. And, you know, let's be the bigger person here and do that.
The only thing is here, though, the only thing the banks are interested in, though, and this is not in any way scandalous because it's how lending institutions work, is getting the money back out of the property or back out of the person who's borrowed it with interest. That's the only thing they're interested in. So if any guarantee sort of goes beyond the average term of a mortgage, do you know, you know what I mean? But that doesn't fix the problem for the homeowner. Does that make sense?
No, but right now many of these homes would still have a residual mortgage on them.
Yeah.
Greg, and you know, the banks are very much tied in here, and right now the bank has a mortgage that is secured on nothing. Mm-hmm. And you know, they should be putting capital aside for that and all of the banking regulations that go with that. And our meeting in January really set the scene, because for the first time ever we had the engineers, we had the Department of Finance and the Department of Housing, we had the BPFI and their members were present at that meeting on the 11th of January. We had the Insurance Ireland group there, we had local councils, we had homeowner reps, we had MAG. It was the first time we had everyone around the table, and it was, you know, our group felt it was quite an awakening moment for some of the people around there. So the Department of Finance are saying, okay, we've got a X billion scheme that is been spent and nobody knows if these properties are mortgageable at the end of it. So how is that good use of the taxpayers' money? The next meeting that was meant to happen today, Greg, was to also include a legal representation. So, you know, we feel like we are making some mm-hmm. traction here. And if we can get everyone around the table, people need to do the right thing. There is no room here for people to be, you know, personal opinions or political pressure. It needs to be stand up and do the right thing for the mm-hmm. citizens of this country.
All right, and I don't want to confuse the situation, Sarah, but I mean, it is part of this, presumably, and I'm not a banker, but, you know, how are these properties, significant amount of properties, reflected in the assets column of these banks, these mortgage providers? Are they represented at a discounted value, no value? Are they represented as full market value? Because I think that all ties into then sort of how they treat the homeowner in this whole process, if that makes sense.
Yeah, wouldn't we all love to know the answer to that? And to any of the good journalists out there, I would say to them, there's a story a week on this, and somebody should really be running with it and trying to highlight this.
That's the issue. But I mean, if I were a shareholder in a bank, I would like to know, and maybe the
information is out there. We are the shareholders.
Yeah, but I would like to know, you know, how are these houses represented on their balance books? Is it full market value? Now, so what was the reason given for this meeting not going ahead, Sarah?
Unforeseen circumstances, okay. Greg. So that could be anything. We don't really know what it is. But we do hope that they will reschedule shortly and get the right people around the table to keep pushing this on, because people are in the middle of remediating their homes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is of utmost importance that people go into this scheme with their eyes wide open.
Other than comments from individuals, do we know if this scheme references officially returning properties to a mortgageable condition? Is that contained within the legislation? Do we know off the top of our heads?
No, from what I've read anyway, I don't believe it does, but somebody could correct me on that if they can find the paragraph where it says it.
Right, Sarah, so just to recap,
it was very much an afterthought, Greg.
Yeah, you know, this scheme
was put out and it's very much an afterthought of, actually, the homeowners are not the only people involved here. The banks, the terms and conditions of your mortgage say that you cannot have damage to your home. You cannot do anything that creates an issue whereby insurance may not be valid on a property. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, here we are 10 years later, thousands of homes are in that situation and the banks have pretended none of this has happened. No. Crime Time reported in 2016, the central bank didn't do their consumer protection. You know, we met with the director of the consumer protection in September, and the central bank have done very little. They were in the Oireachtas last week and they said the issues have been sorted. Yet we wrote to them in January and said that, you know, everything is still not sorted. Mm-hmm. So how do you have any trust in the people who are meant to be minding all of this? It's just shocking.
All right. So, Sarah, is there a positive note to finish on in that progress is being made and it's regrettable that this latest meeting has been deferred? Is there a positive angle? I know the focus group are working really, really hard. I've had some really, you know, I think getting people around a table in and of itself is a huge achievement. So is there a bit of momentum here that's stalled, or is this more troublesome than that? Or what's your assessment of where this particular focus group is at?
Yeah, I think when we look back on the year, Greg, we did have many moments where we thought, yes, we've got something here, and it can be something as simple as getting a meeting together, because for the first time that we went to the central bank or any of these bodies, it was like, this is nothing to do with us, we're not meeting you. So even having those meetings over the course of the year definitely feels like progress, and the 0% loans that the BPFI said that they would, you know, help their members to launch is definitely progress. Mm-hmm. That, unfortunately, is held up between a debate between the Department of Housing and the Department of Finance. So I would ask all of our elected representatives to go and sort out that, and at least that is something that we can give the people, you know, who can't afford to get on the scheme, given the way it's laid up.
Okay.
But we do need the engineers and the banks to make a statement on the mortgageability of their mediated homes. That is of utmost priority at this point.
Can that decision be made before the science is revealed early next year, though?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know what I think the decision needs to be, but I am not a professional in any of that. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
let's see what they say.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I just feel that all roads lead to full demolition and replacing the foundations.
Absolutely.
It just feels that's where we're going.
It just feels that's where we're going.
Okay, listen, thanks, Sarah. Appreciate your time. And just to be clear, and I'm sure you are, we do cover that story as a lot we couldn't do this show if we didn't, right? It affects so many people. But we don't also know everyone that it affects, because there are people finding out all the time that those cracks that they thought were settling cracks is actually defective concrete. People who are selling their properties in Donegal and they have to be tested and then find out they have defective concrete, even though it never crossed their mind. You know, there is a period of time in home construction whereby, you know, don't be certain that your house is not affected by this, is all I would say, because especially if you think, well, my blocks didn't come from such and such a place. There was blocks being moved around the place and sold from different places that originated in other places. That's not to scare or fear anyone, but why do we talk about it so much? Is because we actually really don't know the full scale of this yet. And every day, you know, there's hundreds of people that are just sitting back, not saying nothing, just sitting back to see how this goes, that probably aren't even counted as affected, but they know they are in the heart of hearts. And it doesn't take long for an engineer to come up and have a look. And often as they drive the driveway to dash people's hopes and say, I'm sorry, but this looks like it's defective concrete. Right, okay. Thanks, Sarah. We'll keep you updated on all of that, of course. It emerged this week that the government is set to cut an allowance given to women with breast cancer, cut it by half, in fact. Women who underwent mastectomies had been entitled to two bras and one swimming prosthesis per year under their medical card's entitlements. But we understand that's now to be cut to just one bra per year to the value of €60. Lynn's a former breast cancer patient and joins us on the programme now. Lynn, good morning to you. Thanks for your time.
Greg.
Lynn.
How are you?
I'm okay, Lynn. How are you keeping?
I'm very well, but I'm shocked today. Another day you get up and another cut for vulnerable cancer patients.
Can you talk to
our government?
Can you talk to us about the importance of this and what was provided previously, Lynn? And then we'll get on to your reaction to this decision. I want, please.
Yes. Well, after your mastectomy, you have to go to the healing process, so you get two wee small soft bras to come home with because all your scars and all have to heal before you get fitted for your bra that you'll be wearing all the time. So you're going to get all that, it's all done private. You get two bras, a very nice lady, and I'm just shocked. Like, it shouldn't even be means tested. Mm-hmm. We didn't know we were going to get breast cancer, so that should be part and parcel of your healing process.
Yes, so this should be seen as the treatment, as the healing part of the whole thing, rather
part
than
of your healing.
Something in addition that can be means tested or cut, as we've heard.
That's right. I don't think anything you need to survive after cancer should be means tested. It should automatically come, Greg. Right? But now they're going to send you home with one bra that you... Well, I'm just saying, the value of €60. These are specialised bras, Greg. They have to be fitting in the right places. They have to have pads a bit on the shoulder so the prosthesis isn't pulling blisters onto your shoulders. Like, you know, it's just not throw you a bra and send you home. It's not like that. The woman wants to feel good. She's got 3 months healing to go and she wants to feel like a lady again. Or no, she wants to feel good when she starts putting tighter clothes on. And I just feel that this is another shock to my system that the government's allowed to do this to vulnerable people.
Do you know what's so difficult, I think, Lynn, is that, and listen, I don't think anything should be a secret. I think it's good that people understand what women have to go through and the challenges and what have you. But it is another decision that affects women only. It is another decision that a lot of women affected by this might not be able to feel comfortable at talking about publicly. I wonder sometimes when these decisions are made, do they plan that in? That we won't get brave people like you, Lynn, and others who actually will speak out and say, this is what it's for, this is why it's important, and this is why it shouldn't be cut.
Well, it should. I don't know who makes these decisions. Is it men in suits? It's not got a mother or a sister or a daughter. I mean, we don't know who's going to be coming down the street tomorrow that's wearing the same shoes that I went. You know what I'm trying to say, Greg? Mm-hmm. Or the ladies in this week getting. I mean, they're over 3,500 a year. Ladies has to have mastectomies. They're diagnosed. It isn't their fault. And now they're going to throw them one bra a year. Just say you have 4 or 5 kids. How are you going to afford a bra? You'll give up your bra to take care of your family. So why should it be the government's decision?
Of course, not to mention, you know, that people might be mentally and physically exhausted afterwards, probably unable to work. Probably, you know, even if there were tight resources to begin with, the cancer journey is very expensive. You know, so it leaves people in a very vulnerable position.
You're very vulnerable, Greg.
Yeah, indeed.
You're very vulnerable, Greg. You go home, you come back in 6 weeks, like, and then they're very, very good once you're in the system. But now, I mean, you're going to go back and you're wondering, I mean, what? So when you get the one bra, is that for age 16, age 90 or 100? Do you understand? Yeah. Is it going to be one bra fits all? I'm just saying, who is up there making these decisions? But it's time the people and the woman in Donegal and all round Ireland got to their feet and we done something about this. We can't let government get away. I mean, a scabby bra, like, think about this, but that bra means a whole lot to the ladies who need it.
And again,
they're going through enough on their head.
You know, the health budget's, what, 23 billion? And this is tiny. This is a tiny amount of women. And again, I have to come back to the fact that, and I know I'm a fella, but it just seems to always, and maybe it's not the case, but it always, I can't think of a similar decision that was made that would universally target men. This is another...
I bet if men needed a prosthesis, that wouldn't it be cut?
Well, that's the only conclusion you can come to when you see that it's time and time again, controversies in health seem to affect women, almost, well, it is universally. We would hope that someone has made this decision and that higher-ups will say, no, we can't do this, that this has to be reversed, Lynn. And in fact, more support should be given to women post-surgery.
Yes. It has to be reversed, Greg. It really has to. The ladies should be getting more. If they want a swimsuit, they should get a swimsuit. Mm. They shouldn't need a medical card to get a bra that they really, really need, right? Because I know after surgery, you've bits hanging here and bits hanging there that wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. Scar tissue comes along. And the bras that you can buy in the shop does not cover, you know, those bits.
Yeah.
So, like, you need the professional bras, which you can't buy in any shop, by the way. They're specialist bras. Mm-hmm. You either have to order them online or go to, a more sophisticated shop that sells a lot of bras, and they will fit you for it and order it for you if you can't get it through your breast care nurse.
Yeah, and it's not
but
a luxury
again,
item.
And
also,
it's not
too,
a luxury.
And presumably,
necessity.
As part of the healing process, it supports and secures where it might need to, or whatever it might be. It's a, it is. There's a medical element to this.
Mental, medical, and it's a necessity. It's not something, you know, that's really a necessity to the healing process to get your right underwear under your clothes.
Okay, Lynn, thanks so much for speaking out.
And not, can I just say this? Whatever government, can I say this?
Say what you
that
like.
That government can't run a bath, right? And I'm really shocked that government, they should take away their grants for a lunch for one day a year, and that would pay for everything that the breast cancer patients need. I'm really annoyed today. I'm really in shock, Greg. Okay. And thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for accepting the call. Take care of yourself. That's Lynn there, a former breast cancer patient, reacting to the news that the allowance given to women with breast cancer has been halved. Women who underwent mastectomies had been entitled to two bras and a swimming prosthesis per year under the medical card entitlements, and it should have perhaps been universally available to begin with. But now it's just cut to one bra per year to the value of €60. And you heard from Lynn there, these are not off-the-peg items. These are specialist items. They aren't a luxury. They're in part of the healing process as women come through an incredibly stressful experience, often tired, often under-resourced because people can't work. Maybe the partners had to take work off. You know, there's a myriad of reasons as to why this decision seems absolutely crazy. Okay, next guest coming in to studio after these. Mary Walker Callaghan is Regional Manager of Lifestart Services, CLG, and is in studio with us. Good morning to you, Mary.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for calling in. Right, okay, so Lifestart Services is leading out the Parent Hub Donegal, is that correct? And talk to us a little bit about the hub.
No, we are a member of the Parent Hub Donegal, uh-huh. and we led out on an initiative called the Parenting Platform.
I get you.
On behalf of the Parent Hub.
That's why I should read my notes, isn't it really, Mary? Okay, and the aim of the parenting platform is to be sort of like a one-stop shop, a one-stop destination to help parents and guardians and caregivers in the tough task of raising children and raising them happy and healthy.
Absolutely. Look, we're always looking for ways to make information and tips and guidance more accessible to parents. So when this initiative came up, the Parent Hub decided to apply for funding, and the funding has come through the HSE and the Children and Young People Services Committees in Sligo, Leitrim, Cavan, Monaghan and Donegal. So it was a way to collate all of the information. So what we did was we carried out a survey for parents, and they identified what kind of information they would like on the platform, and that's who's guiding us with the information we're putting up.
Yeah, and I think having a reliable location to access it all is vital as well.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, you never know when you're raising children. And as we know, there's no handbook as such to it. But you never know as problems arise. And where do you go? Where do you find that resource? This is a place whereby you would hope that most of the needs mm-hmm. would be met in terms of information gathering.
Absolutely, Greg. As a parent myself, and I've worked in this area for many, many years, you know, when something happens with your own children, it's hard to navigate your way through everything. So mm-hmm. what we're trying to do is allow parents to access information easier. All of the information that will be going onto the platform is from professionals, both statutory and community. So we have a lot of HSE staff on there. We have a lot of the services throughout the region donating talks and stuff. So it's all evidence-based information and reliable for parents.
So talk to us about what kind of information is there?
Well, what we're hoping at the moment, we've about 28 items on the platform. So that could be anything from toilet training to speech and language to mental health and well-being to I'm just trying to think of all the ones that are out there now at the moment.
But I think it's people a whole are getting range. An idea yeah. of the type of stuff you talked about. The stuff that pops up on the parenting
absolutely.
Journey.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what we want to do is cover from pre-birth right the way up to young adulthood, so that we have something there for everybody, that we have information there for mothers, we have information there for fathers, and information there for young people as well.
Okay. How do people access the platform?
Well, it's going to be shared out amongst all of the Children and Young People Services Committee. So the links will be up on all of our Facebook pages. Also, we have put a QR code together. So all practitioners in the region are going to have that QR code on just on their diary. So if they're with parents, they can allow parents to access it.
And it's the idea that this is a platform that grows over time.
Absolutely.
And additional stuff is added to it.
Even though we've been developing it for the past 12 months, and I have to give credit to Chris Curran from Digital Creations, who helped us develop the platform, our idea is we're just at the beginning. This is about getting more and more information. And what I would say to parents is that if they go onto YouTube, there is an option to make comments. If we're missing information, if there are gaps, feed it back to us, because mm-hmm. that's what we want. We wanted a two-way street so that they can direct us as well in what we're missing.
Now, all of us consume information in different ways. Mm-hmm. I find if it's, you know, once I go past the third paragraph, I will try, right? I'll study, but I kind of zone out a little bit. So yeah. You have to have different ways of delivering the information, don't you, for people?
Absolutely. So there'll be podcasts, there'll be webinars, there will be videos, there'll be short videos, there'll be longer videos. So it's, again, people can choose how they want to access the information. I know a lot of people like the idea of podcasts, and you know, you can stop and start it, and that suits them if they're out for a walk and they can listen to the information.
Yeah, exactly. And as you say, you know, you just give a few examples of the things that come up. Mm-hmm. And I found myself as well with a young one. You can go onto the internet or whatever mm-hmm. and find yourself down a rabbit hole, because all roads lead to yeah. something really yeah. quite worrying or negative. Now, I know this is not about health advice, but no. It could be about, you know, it could be about, well, why is my 2-year-old not saying mm-hmm. mommy or daddy mm-hmm. yet, or mm-hmm. Why. Potty training, or
yes,
you know what I'm on about,
yes,
stuff
absolutely.
That you go, well, where do you
absolutely.
Go? And sometimes, actually, you know, and this is, I'm not speaking about my own situation here, but sometimes then you kind of, people be reluctant to ask someone close to them as well. Do you know what I mean? Because then that can open yeah. up a whole.
I think parents always think when they're dealing with a situation, they always think they're the only one that is actually dealing with
yeah.
that, where in fact every parent goes through these issues. Like, one of the biggest issues we would see in LifeStart is around sleep. Mm. And children not sleeping, mm-hmm. you know, and that is a big part of the platform. Denise Gillespie, who is a specialist practice nurse, has done talks on sleep, and she will talk parents through how you set up sleep routines and
routine
all of that.
Is just so
routine
critical.
Is absolutely,
and the children love the routine.
Absolutely,
and
they need it.
It does mean yeah. that sometimes you have to leave things, or sometimes you have to kick people out of the house.
That's right. That's
but
right.
if you can, for the most part, stick to a rigid routine.
Yeah.
It's astonishing, because yeah. the child loves it.
Absolutely. The child loves it. Yeah. And home life becomes a lot easier when you have the right routines in place.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And at the moment, there's a lot of information there. It is going to grow. And you know, even if you have a big blue sky meeting and you've 50 people in a room saying, well, what should we put up here? Mm-hmm. It's possible sort of that you don't get everything. And that's why you need that sort of input from parents and guardians, don't you? To say, well, could you do something on this? Could you do something on that?
That's right. And I suppose another thing that's very important about this, like this platform has been developed for the region up the north here, for the five counties, but it's on YouTube, so it's accessible to parents, whether they're in Slayhead in Kerry or they're Achill Island in Mayo. So the idea is that it's going to benefit parents all over the country if they want to access it.
And also, too, I find this information, it's obviously going to be educational and informative, but also reassuring.
Absolutely.
You know, reassuring
And giving parents tips for things that they can do themselves. And, you know, Greg, it doesn't matter who you are or what your background is. When I became a parent for the first time, my mother came from Kerry for 6 weeks. I would have been lost without her. So we know in today's world, parents don't have that extended family. They mightn't have that parent that can come and support them.
So how did that finish? Did you go, right, Mum, I've had enough help now, can you sod off?
No, what she had she to. Say? My father wanted her back to Kerry.
he'd lent her for long enough.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So, in a way, there's not actually a website you can direct us to. It's done through the QR code.
Yeah, and it's on YouTube. So if you check the LifeStart Facebook page, the link will be up. Okay. Any of the services that are working with children and families in the region will be sharing the information.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we'll share it out.
And I think even if you Google the parenting platform, because I tried that before I came in this morning, it comes up straight away on YouTube.
Very good. Yeah. Parenting platform. Okay, I'll do that. Have a look at that. Okay, brilliant stuff. Well done to all involved. And hopefully it does help. I'm sure it will. That's the whole motivation of it, isn't it? Mary Walker Callahan, thank you so much for joining us.
That's lovely, Greg. Thank you very much.
And you can depart as you see fit. I do appreciate your time. Thank you very much indeed. Right, to some of your comments here, a caller says, and the government tells us we're looking after women by removing them from the constitution. So where are the women? Where's the care for women here? This is off the back of the conversation we had with Lynn there. And just to be absolutely clear, because a few people were texting in yesterday about is women or woman or mother? And I just want to make sure the nature of the sort of presentation here is people, I might make a casual comment, right? But when it comes down to a referendums, it's very important, obviously, that I'm careful with that. So I will be, of course, going further on. Mother, I understand the term mother will no longer be in the Constitution for my reading. The term women, the word women, will. So if someone texted in yesterday and I may have confused mother and women, my apologies. A caller says he's having continuous issues getting through to his local surgery. Either the phone is constantly engaged or if it does ring, it rings out with no one answering. Says his mother has had the same issues. When you call Now Doc, they want to know why you didn't go to your own GP. A caller says, I applied online to the passport office on Monday afternoon to renew my passport. Guess what arrived today, Wednesday? That must be a record. We have had similar experiences like that. You know, if it's a simple renewal, it can turn around real quick. But hey, try and get a first-time passport for a child and the experiences can be a little bit more difficult. And it has to be robust as well, of course. Physios were told on Monday that they were to vacate St. Joseph's by Friday the 23rd. Patients now will have to travel to Donegal Town or Lifford. Patients who can't drive post-operation, etc., inpatients will not receive a service. I want to hear from more people who may be learning of this decision for the first time and tell me how it might affect you. I didn't realise physios were only told on Monday that they had to be out by Friday. Are they being relocated to provide the services in Lifford and Donegal Town, I wonder? Where the physio department is now at St. Joseph's, it was the old Drogheda ward, which was subsequently fully renovated when they moved the patients to Angrenia Court a few years ago. Surely the building's fire regs haven't changed since then. A total smokescreen to take away another service. It's downgrading by stealth. Okay, well, we are going to try and get some clarity on that. Good reaction to the Micah song we had earlier on, as it's being called. Great job of the Micah song. Very catchy tune. Rosemary says good morning to you, Rosemary, but Gillian says well done, Stella Farron, the redress song is brilliant. Ireland in a nutshell, don't help people who live in a death trap sandcastles, but allow RTE folk to get away with everything. Give them a payment as a send off intentionally deceptive action designed to provide the perpetrator with an unlawful gain or to deny a right to a victim. There's nothing unlawful about the process, even if we don't like it. But I have to say that, of course, for legal reasons.